accession number 3770, Reel 2.
Reel 2, Dennis Flanders. So you visited these other places,
yes,
and presumably yes. These the drawings also went to the War Museum.
Some of them did, yes, yes, and some of them went locally. I seem to remember a big one of York, of the Guildhall being burnt, was bought by the municipality of York. I don't know what it was called, you know, the library or the art gallery, I don't know which.
What happened when you got called up? What line did your...
Oh, well, I was called up, as you say, and I joined up at Cardiff. I'd never been to Cardiff before, and shall I say, first of all, I took my drawing board with me and a pocket full of pencils and rubbers and things, and was able to use them fairly soon, but of course not immediately. Yes, I had to go to Cardiff and did the 6 weeks basic training there, as everybody did in these first few weeks. And then I was transferred, first of all, I think, to the Ordnance Corps and then to the Royal Engineers. But before going on as far as that, I want to say something about Cardiff. As I said just now, I had never been to Cardiff, but like most Londoners, I suppose, I thought Cardiff was a fearful place, full of docks and weird sailors and slums and all dark and dismal and coal mines and all the rest of it. And to my utter astonishment, I found it to be a most beautiful town, with a great castle in it, castle walls lining some of the main streets, and an enormous area of beautiful white public buildings in a park, which I subsequently discovered was called Cathay's Park, and is in effect, I believe, a part of the castle domain, which of course was the Marquis of Bute. So it was a great surprise to get to know Cardiff. And then this, in a way, pointed to the advantages, really, I gained by having to join the army. I was one of those very lucky ones that although I was A1 medically, I never got sent abroad. And as I said to you just now, I really had more experience of war as a civilian in London, crouching in a cellar in a London suburb while the bombs were dropping than I did when I joined the army. But this was just the luck of the draw, I think. There I was, I got to know Cardiff, and I was able, after the first few weeks of being utterly tired, of course, wore off, I was able to visit some of the valleys around Cardiff, and I saw Caerphilly Castle, which was marvellous. I'm still waiting to go back there to draw it. I didn't have time. Well, yes, I did. I did a little skit. Well, then, as I say, that came to an end, and I found myself in the Royal Engineers up in Yorkshire at the School of Military Engineering, where I met a number of other artists, some of them quite well known, who were employed in making models and drawing maps and doing all sorts of things on the headquarters staff of the School of Military Engineering. And there I stayed for a considerable time. The city of Ripon was half a mile down the road one way from the camp. Beautiful little city. And Fountains Abbey, in my opinion, still quite one of the most beautiful domains in the whole of Britain, lay precisely a mile and a half westward. I was very fortunate, and so were some of the others, in getting permission to go into the grounds at any time. And you can imagine the summer evenings when we'd finished our military duties, to jump on the bicycle, and we all had bicycles. Well, that was another thing. I learnt to ride a bicycle, as I'd never learnt one at home. And to get to know Fountains Abbey, which, as I say, is most beautiful. And lovely ruins, lovely river, lovely landscape, beautiful house next door called Fountains Hall. One of the most loveliest places you can imagine. And I suppose this experience of being in the country studied with beautiful pieces of architecture, really set the seal on what I was going to spend the rest of my life drawing and painting. We made lots of friends with the local people, the townsmen of Ripon and the farmers of the Dales. Many of the friends I still have now. This made an enormous influence on me. And indeed, I go up to Yorkshire, or at least the north, whenever I have a half an opportunity or any excuse, because there's something about the northern landscape which is slightly different from the southern. I love the southern landscape because I belong here, its slow rivers and its beautiful villages. But the north has that little bit extra grandeur of distant mountains and things like that. The rivers are quite different in the north because they bubble and roar and eddy. They're not slow moving like the southern rivers. Nonetheless, I'm very fond of the north. And occasionally, when I had a few days of leave, I would go further afield, particularly to Durham, which I had been dying to see. And I've really had a sort of honeymoon with the city of Durham and views there ever since. In fact, I was there again 2 years ago and spent a whole month there drawing.
One could say that your army time was very conducive.
Very conducive indeed, yes. Mm. I'm afraid I can't say that it altered my outlook on humanity at all. But this may be, of course, tied up with the fact that I had a fairly happy war in that respect.
Yes.
You know, I was missed the... I didn't have much experience of horror, as many people did.
Can you just say where you spent your time until you came back into civilian life? Can you just follow the time?
Well, I stayed at the School of Military Engineering at Ripon until the end of the war. So this was 1942 to, I think it was 1944. The war wasn't quite over, but it was getting over. When the authorities started a marvellous scheme to train service people, to spend a month training them for their civilian work, either what they had done before the war or what they wanted to do after they got demobilised, and various colleges called formation colleges were set up, one in each command, I believe, and one or two abroad. The notices were put up on the unit notice board, and of course I immediately applied for the one on art. And instead of that course, having to wait for that course for a couple of years, which I was going to spend in the army, because I don't know whether you know, but there was a very special arrangement made for those last in, last out, and there was quite a long time to go. Undoubtedly, I should have been sent on this course just before I got demobilized, which was, as I say, over a year ahead. But because the army do funny things, I got sent immediately to Welbeck Abbey, which is in Nottinghamshire. This was the Northern Command Formation College. This was another marvellous experience, because although we lived in huts in the grounds, the park of Welbeck Abbey was absolutely out of this world. The most beautiful. It's one of the four big estates, three or four, I forget which, that form the dukery, the district known as the Dukeries and Sherwood Forest and all that. The house itself was very fine, and of course I began... apart from the instruction that we had in the arts, I began going around again with a bicycle, painting the landscape and drawing the villages. Then I went to Lincoln, eastward, and Derbyshire, westward, about 25 miles each way. And then, just before I was going back to my unit, the commandant says, "Would you like to stay here and be an instructor?" I thought to myself, well, I've been at Ripon quite long enough, and I don't think I can possibly draw Fountains Abbey anymore. I'd like to come here. So I said, yes. He said, all right, I'll see what I can do. So I went back to Ripon, the unit there, and within a few weeks I got sent back to Welbeck Abbey, where I had a very happy time, thank you very much, till I got demobilised.
Very good. That sums up the chronology anyway.
That's the chronology.
Good.
Yes.
Well, I think I want to mention at least a couple of points that you had briefly talked about. One apparently was an exhibition of historic London under fire.
Yes.
In which you were presented.
I recall that, yes. Now, that was during the period immediately after the bombing came to an end. I cannot quite recall whether I was in the army then or whether I wasn't, or whether I hadn't joined up. I remember that it was an exhibition organized by a number of what we now call amenity societies. There was the Society for the for the Protection of Ancient Buildings, whose offices are two doors away from here, and of which I was a member and am a member. The Ecclesiological Society is another one I recall. Whether the National Trust was involved in it or not, I don't quite know. But I think these societies thought it was a very good opportunity to have an exhibition in London, well organized, well publicized, to show everybody that although there was a war on, we still had a lot of historic buildings and we should still try and look after them. Although everything we did was to help win the war and put an end to Hitlerism and so on, we must really try now, long before, well, I can't say long before, but before the war was won, to try to open people's eyes to the beautiful historic buildings we have. And a lot of the exhibition consisted of photographs and paintings and drawings of artists who liked doing that sort of thing, and some of mine were there. In fact, I think I remember acting as chairman to one or two lecturers, because we did have lecturers. But I'm a little vague about it all, but I think I'm right in saying that it was really thought, rather like the concerts of ENSA, that we must keep art alive, you know. This was the sort of thing.
Therefore, your drawings figured.
Yes, yes, some of the things that I had recently
done. Which
you've
already mentioned.
Yes, yes. Oh, yes, it was these drawings of bombed London, I think.
Which had been bought and went to the war museum.
Yes, that's right, yes. But they didn't all go to the war museum. They bought a selection of them, yes.
And the Wren churches damaged.
Yes.
This also formed another series, did it?
No, that was a part of it.
A part of it.
A part of it. And it was a particularly bad fire raid just before Christmas, which destroyed so many Wren churches. And it was at a weekend. And it was because of the English habit of going away for the weekend that everything was locked up and nobody was there. This was a terrible thing. It really was an indictment of the English way of life. Mm. Mm. And fire watching became a far more important thing after this particular raid on London, when so many of the Wren churches got burned. Mm. Well, I was very keen to draw them all, and I had, I suppose, a slight feeling of journalism through having tried to get pictures in newspapers, you know, something with a news story to it, that made me think of that as a collection of pictures which were of news value, or what the newspapers call a news story. And with these drawings, I rushed along to the offices of the Illustrated London News, and Sir Bruce Ingram, the great editor of the Times, said, oh yes, well, I'll publish them, and he did. Mm. And this was one of the first times I got into the Illustrated London News, of course, which was a marvellous aim for artists, you know, to get a picture accepted by the Illustrated London News. So there was nothing special about that. It wasn't a commission. Of course, many of these, or several of these Wren churches that got burnt out, have been rebuilt very, very beautifully. And marvellous craftsmen have recreated these this Brindley Gibbon carvings, you know. St. Lawrence Jewry is one, St. Mary Le Bow. They're resplendent again now. St. Bride's, Fleet Street, too, largely paid for, I expect, by the newspaper people. So, so that was the story of
there
that.
There were no other exhibitions during the war that you remember involving your work?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. You will recall I talked about the Royal Engineers and Ripon and the fact that there were quite a number of artists at the School of Military Engineering. Well, there were various... how shall I put it? Charities... instigated during the war. One was, I think, to help Russia, because Russia, of course, was our great ally then. And another one to help, I can't remember what. It couldn't have been China, could it? But there was another one. Worldwide, and I think Mrs. Churchill was sponsored one of them. So all the artists who were at Ripon got together, of course they were all painting in their spare time, you see, or drawing portraits of each other. We held an exhibition in the local town hall once, twice. Mm. And quite a number of these colleagues of mine have become quite well-known artists since.
Mm-hmm. It's fun.
Well, there was Cuneo. There was Jimmy Wood. Whom I should really call James Porteous Wood, who was a Scot from Edinburgh and is now one of the, in fact I think he is, the chief designer for Aspres. Cuneo, of course, you'll have heard of, his great paintings of people and ceremonies and so on. And Ernest Greenwood, who is now the president of the Royal Society of Painters and Watercolours. Mm. It's curious to think how these groups of people sort of, you know, make their way in life afterward. Mm. Here we were in Ripon. We had a marvellous exhibition, as I say, in the town hall, which was a very nice Georgian building in the middle of the market square, with the main council chamber, which was our exhibition hall, on the first floor in the proper Italian manner, you know, the piano nobile. Mm. And we were helped by the commandant. We were helped by the bishop and the dean and the mayor. They were all going to help. And although I didn't have a commission, you see, I was in the ranks all the time, but I was very concerned with organizing this exhibition. And 2 days before the private view, when the commandant was going to open it and the bishop was coming and they were all coming, I lay in bed and thought, supposing the floor falls down with crowds of people, because the whole of the city of Ripon and the School of Military Engineering will be there. Mm-hmm. So I got leave from my CO next morning and rushed down to the city and called on the city engineer and told him what will happen, because there are going to be a lot of people there. And he said, well, how many do you expect? I said, well, I don't know. How many people do you think are going to get in? It's a huge room, isn't it? And it's only a wooden floor, you know, it's rather wavy. And he thought for a bit and he said, oh, it's all right if they don't dance. And I said, well, I think they're hardly likely to dance. So everything was all right. And I told somebody about it, and I said, I didn't worry anymore. And this was a great success. Curiously enough, from my point of view, it was even more of a success because I got a message afterwards from somebody who was staying at a little inn down the Harrogate Road, who was the director of the firm of Kolnagis. The great art dealers in Bond Street that I knew of. So I went down with my friend James Porteous Wood. Incidentally, my friendship with him during those years was also of great help to me because we each admired each other's work and used to go about cycling and painting together. We went down to see this director of Kolnagis, who said, "Well, we like your work. I'll give you a show in after the war in Bond Street in Kolnagis," which he did. So that was another piece of advantage for me. Mm-hmm. I can't think of any other exhibitions actually during the war, except, of course, those that were held in the National Gallery. One or two, I think, were held, and one was invited if one was on leave to a private view, you know. And that's where I met my great hero, Sir Muirhead Bone.
Oh.
He was there in uniform because he was a major. They gave him a major ship, if that's the word, yes, in the Royal Marines draw.
Could you elaborate on this worship?
Yes, I could. There's a little. I can make a little history of that that runs concurrently with the other history you've got. It was during the years when I was working for this West End interior decorator I told you about, and I was at the Polytechnic, and I was in my early 20s, and that's the period I think when your mind is expanding, when you're absorbing everything. And if you're lucky, you'll absorb something that's going to spend the rest of your life doing, you see. And one lunch hour, it must have been in the year 1936, I saw in the window of Bumpus's bookshop, which at that time was in Oxford Street, near opposite Selfridge's, I think, a lot of magnificent drawings, sort of foolscap size, obviously reproduced, in colour. They were magnificent drawings of Spain, Spanish cities and towns. And I saw they were by somebody called Muirhead Bone. I'd never seen such topographical drawings. Well, of course, they were more than topographical drawings, but one calls them topographical because they were of particular places. But they were absolutely splendid. I'd never seen such drawings. The people, the detail, the composition, the restrained colour. They were by a man called Muirhead Bone, and I gathered, by looking round the window, that they were plates of a large book which was being published, which was presumably just published, in two volumes, called Old Spain, at 100 guineas, by Macmillan. I came next day, and gazed at these in absolute astonishment, and I made a resolution then and there. That is what I'm going to do for England, or Britain, as it happened. I studied his work, of course. I then discovered he was a very well-known man. I may have heard of him, I'm not quite sure, but I certainly hadn't noticed his work before. I then found that he was even then a war artist, and I was fortunate enough to meet him, as I say, at a party in the National Gallery. I then found that he'd drawn a lot of wonderful drawings in the previous war, and in a second-hand bookshop I found two volumes of these drawings, which were published by Country Life, in colour and black and white, of all the scenes and the bombing, the wrecked chateau and the camps and so on of the First War, which I bought and I've got here. I subsequently bought the Book of Old Spain a few years ago, so I've got that. Well, his influence was pretty great. I can't say I suppose that I've imitated him, and now I don't think of him really much at all, not in my own work. But it was a great thrill. And although, as I've just said to you, there's my life's work, this was before the war, and one knew the war was coming, and of course one didn't expect one was going to get through the war, really. Born in one war, died in the next, you know. But as it turned out, I was able to carry that idea in my mind ever since, and indeed I'm still doing it. And one day I want to make a book of the best drawings I've ever done, you see.
Yes.
I've got them all recorded, I've got photographs of all the best of them, they're all here, all ready to come out.
Now, there was an organized war artist.
Yes.
There was, yes.
Yes.
You haven't yet mentioned it, or in what sense you became connected with it.
Well, I didn't, really.
You didn't?
No, you see, I was very young at the time. I know the years, of course. One's age, 22, 23, 24, 25, these days doesn't seem all that young, because people now are adulated at a very young age. But in those days, I considered myself very humble. And I was not then, although I'd had drawings in national newspapers, I really was not acknowledged by any artistic authority as being an artist, as it were. And I'd heard about the War Artists Advisory Bureau, I think it was called, and certain people had been appointed war artists, but they were all much older, much more important than I was. And it was only when I had done drawings on my own account that I took them along to the Artists Advisory Committee, which I believe was Sir Kenneth Clarke,
yes.
Was it not?
Yes, you did take them.
I took them, but I didn't see him. I sort of handed them in,
yes.
You see. And everybody was very nice. I believe it was mixed up with the Ministry of Information. And by the way, we all knew about the Ministry of Information because you had to get permissions to sketch from them, because as soon as war was declared, if you were seen drawing out of doors, of course you were nabbed by the police instantly. In fact, I got arrested by the guards up in Regent's Park, I believe, about 2 days after war was declared. Some soldier was chasing me along the canal side because there were some barracks there, you know. And of course, in the end, I nearly sold the picture to the officer, but still, I mean, that's neither here nor there. But one forgets these troubles and trials that existed in those years. Well, and because I wanted, because of this influence, you see, of Hanslip Fletcher and getting drawings in newspapers, every drawing I sketched, I took it along to the Ministry of Information to have it passed for publication. You had to do this. They were pretty easy, of course. And they stamped, there's a little stamp on the back, passed for publication or something like this. But I did this with all of them, whether they were going to be published or not. And I heard about these war artists. People,